welcome to a special episode of Music for Life, a program which explores the purpose and value of music to humanity's enrichment. I'm Ryan Malone, concert manager for Armstrong Auditorium and host of this program. This is another one of our special episodes that I've titled Pre-Concert Talks. These episodes, only 1 hour long instead of our usual 2 hour format, will air the week of a concert at Armstrong Auditorium here in Edmond, Oklahoma. And we are coming up on another thrilling event here at Armstrong. This is Grammy-winning cellist Sarah Santambrogio, founding member of the world-renowned chamber ensemble, the Eroica Trio. And this is Chopin's famous Etude in E Major, Opus 10, No. 3, from her latest recording, The Chopin Collection. And this album was listed as one of the Washington Post's notable recordings of 2013. And on Thursday, January 14th, 2016, Ms. Santambrogio will be performing works from this album on the stage of Armstrong Auditorium right here in Edmond, Oklahoma. This episode of Music for Life will serve as a pre-concert talk for this performance to equip our audience for this exquisite recital, introduce all our listeners to one of the greatest cellists of our day, and explore some of the most beautiful music in all the repertoire. As stated in our first few pre-concert talk episodes, where we discussed the upcoming performances of Joshua Bell, Mark Jenkins, and Gerard Schwartz at Armstrong, it's quite common for concert halls to provide printed program notes for concert goers. Occasionally, some will even provide a pre-concert lecture where patrons can enter the hall early and hear about that evening's program. Consider this episode one of those lectures, but one that can be consumed in an audio format such as this. For this particular pre-concert talk, or for these program notes, we will talk about cellist Sarah Santambrogio and the all-Chopin program she is bringing to Armstrong. Ms. Santambrogio first came to international attention after she won the 8th International Tchaikovsky Violoncello Competition in Moscow, Russia. Violoncello is the full name for the cello. As a result of her medal, she was asked to perform a recital at Carnegie Hall. The event was filmed by CBS News and was aired internationally. The New York Times described her performance as sheer pleasure. She has since developed an extensive career both as a soloist and a founding member of the Eroica Trio. She has appeared with orchestras such as Atlanta, Boston Pops, Chicago, Dallas, Moscow State Philharmonic, St. Louis, San Francisco, and Seattle. Ms. Santambrogio has performed in some of the major music centers and festivals of the world, including the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam, Musikverein in Vienna, Lincoln Center, Hollywood Bowl, Kennedy Center, Ravinia, and Aspen. Her father, John Santambrogio, principal cellist of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, was Ms. Santambrogio's first teacher. At age 16, she was accepted to the Curtis Institute of Music on a full scholarship. Only 3 years later, world-renowned cellist Leonard Rose invited her to study at the Juilliard School. Her chamber ensemble, the Eroica Trio, won the prestigious Naumburg Chamber Music Competition in 1991. The trio has since traveled the globe, touring parts of the United States, Europe, Asia, the Middle East, Australia, and New Zealand. The trio has released 8 recordings for Angel EMI Classics Records, which have received several Grammy nominations. As a soloist, she won a Grammy for her performance of Bernstein's arias and barcaroles on Sebastian Records. A track from her 2004 album, Dreaming, was featured as the opening soundtrack in an award-winning HBO documentary. In 2009 and 2011, respectively, she released 2 volumes of Bach cello suites. Gramophone magazine raved about Volume 2, calling it technically formidable and intensely communicative. and saying, "These performances grab you by the ears and refuse to let you go." About Volume 1, the same publication gushed, "She comes impressively close to the soul of Bach, and it is a miracle of sound." Well, I believe she gets close to another soul of one of history's great composers in her album, The Chopin Collection, released in 2013, and which will serve as the program for her January 14th performance at Armstrong Auditorium. So let's talk about some of this great music. The Polish-born Frédéric Chopin is one of the most famous composers of all time. Even people who don't know a lot about him may be familiar with the fact that he wrote almost exclusively for the piano. Almost exclusively. There are two masterpieces in his output that were composed for cello and piano. These, of course, will be the centerpiece for Sarah Sant'Ambrogio's All Chopin recital at Armstrong, but these certainly wouldn't fill an entire program. She's also doing a series of wonderful transcriptions for cello and piano. A transcription is where a composer or arranger takes a piece of music written for another instrument or group of instruments and rearranges it to fit the instrument of his or her choosing. It's not exactly the same thing as an arrangement, which often implies more liberty being taken with the material. A transcription stays somewhat respectful and true to the original composition. It's just transferring it from one instrument to another. So first, let's talk about some of these transcriptions. I'll illustrate what one of Chopin's famous piano works sound like just on the piano, and then I will show you how someone took that piano piece and transcribed it for cello. Let's take his famous Nocturne No. 2 in E-flat major. You can hear in the original piano-only version how the piano plays the main melody, or the tune, in the right hand, the higher pitches, and it plays an accompaniment figure in the left hand, or the lower pitches. I've played a bit of this nocturne in a previous episode. Here's the main theme. So that's the main theme from Chopin's Nocturne No. 2 in E-flat major. It's a piano-only composition. However, Ms. Sant'Ambrogio will be performing a transcription of this nocturne. It was transcribed by David Popper, a cellist and composer of the late 19th century. Notice in Sarah Sant'Ambrogio's recording how the cello takes the main melody and the accompaniment figure that was originally in the pianist's left hand is now all the pianist does. It makes it quite a bit easier for the pianist, since what was intended for one hand is now spread across two. Here's Sarah Sant'Ambrogio's recording of Chopin's Nocturne No. 2 in E-flat. That was David Popper's transcription of Frédéric Chopin's Nocturne No. 2 in E-flat, which was a piece Chopin originally wrote for piano, like almost all of Chopin's compositions. The transcriber took the main theme out of the piano and gave it to the solo cello. You can hear how Carl Davidoff does that in this transcription of Chopin's waltz in C-sharp minor, Opus 64, No. 2. Here's the main theme in its original piano-only form, which I've played on this show before, in fact. Thank you. You hear the main theme in the pianist's right hand, and then the left hand doing the accompaniment figure that is oftentimes referred to as boom chuck chuck, boom chuck chuck. So in Davidoff's transcription of this Chopin waltz, the cellist does the main theme and the pianist does the boom chuck chuck, spread out easily over two hands. Here is Sarah Santambrogio's gorgeous rendition of this transcription. That was another great piano piece of Frédéric Chopin's The Waltz in C-sharp minor, Opus 64, No. 2, transcribed for cello and piano. That transcription was by Carl Davidoff and one of several transcriptions that Sarah Santambrogio will be performing on her January 14th recital at Armstrong Auditorium here in Edmond, Oklahoma. As stated earlier, Chopin wrote almost exclusively for the piano. His only two cello works will be the centerpiece of the program at Armstrong, but it will be filled with many other transcriptions of works originally intended for just piano. Now, as a great pianist, you may wonder what Chopin would think of someone taking his piano compositions and adapting them to another instrument. Well, Sarah Santambrogio, in discussing her Chopin album in a YouTube video, explains this.
Absolutely in love with this music. I love his sonata, which is his last great full-scale work that he wrote before he died, and the Polonaise Brillante. But what was the revelation for me was the absolute heartbreaking beauty of these transcriptions that Chopin himself encouraged the composers and cellists to do of his solo piano pieces for cello and piano. There is something about the voice of the cello, its soulfulness and its passion, that mixed with Chopin's music is just incredibly potent.
So Chopin encouraged instrumentalists like cellists to make these transcriptions since they understood their instrument as well as he understood the piano. Now, I'm a pianist. In fact, I'm honored to be Miss Santambrogio's pianist for this concert. And you might expect pianists to be a little possessive of these pieces, afraid of cellists or other instrumentalists encroaching on our music. But that's not the case at all. It is simply great music and great melody, and having an instrumentalist highlight that melody sometimes can be more impactful, I think, than even it all being played on the piano. A great example of this is the Chopin Etude in C-sharp minor, Opus 25, No. 7. This slow etude is characterized by a long, sustained melody. Now, on the piano, when you strike a key, the sound immediately begins decaying. So this sustained melody in the piano, albeit so beautiful, has a completely different effect when performed on a stringed instrument which has the ability to sustain a note at the same intensity or even to increase intensity during the sustain. I think this makes for an even more moving experience when hearing this etude by Chopin. I want to play this in its entirety. This is a transcription by Alexander Glazunov, and it has been transcribed into the key of E minor, which is a different key than the original piano version, but one more easily playable on the cello in this case. Listen to not only how the cellist is able to shape and sustain the long melodic notes, but the ability to change pitches with slight slides and glides, which wouldn't be possible on the keys of a piano.
Thank you.
You are listening to a special episode of Music for Life on KPCG. I'm Ryan Malone, concert manager for Armstrong Auditorium and host for this program. We are discussing cellist Sarah Santambrogio and the All Chopin program she will present at Armstrong Auditorium here in Edmond, Oklahoma, Thursday, January 14th. This program is another of our pre-concert talks for the various performances we'll have throughout the season at Armstrong. That was a transcription of Chopin's Etude in C-sharp minor, Opus 25, number 7. Though it was originally written for piano, like most of Chopin's compositions, many transcriptions have been made of Chopin's works to include other instruments. Again, a transcription is where a composer or arranger takes a piece of music written for a specific instrument or group of instruments and rearranges it to fit the instrument of his or her choosing. It's not exactly the same thing as an arrangement, which often implies more liberty being taken with the material. A transcription stays somewhat truer to the original composition. It's just transferring it from one instrument to another instrument or grouping of instruments. Chopin encouraged transcriptions of his works for this purpose. Other transcriptions that Ms. Santambrogio will perform in her All Chopin recital at Armstrong include the Etude in E major, which we heard at the top of the program, the Waltz in A minor, Opus 34, number 2, and the famous Nocturne in C-sharp minor, Opus Posthumus. Now, I keep using this word opus. You'll see OP period on many concert programs, this one included, after the title of the piece. Opus is a Latin word meaning work, and it's often used in music publishing to distinguish where in the composer's output this work was published. For instance, Chopin's Polonaise Brillante for cello and piano is Opus 3, so that's one of the first compositions Chopin had published. The Sonata for cello and piano is Opus 65, which is the last composition he had published. Now, that does not mean he only wrote 65 pieces. Many pieces of the same genre were published under the same opus number. For instance, we heard Chopin's Nocturne No. 2 in E-flat, which is more properly Opus 9 No. 2. And in that Opus 9 set are three nocturnes of his output of 21 nocturnes. So there's an Opus 9 number 1, an Opus 9 number 2, and an Opus 9 number 3 in that set. Most of Chopin's 27 etudes are divided into two opus sets. His Opus 10 set of etudes include 12 individual etudes, and his Opus 25 set, of which we heard Opus 25 number 7 just now, includes another 12 etudes. So one opus number may be a slew of pieces of the same genre. We heard Waltz Opus 64 number 2, which is from a set of three waltzes Chopin published late in life, out of the total 20 waltzes he wrote. And then, even everything Chopin had published in his lifetime does not complete the catalog of his output. There are pieces that are in the category of opus posthumus. Let's talk about what this indication means. You might see this on a program as OP period, then POST period. This means the work was published after the composer died. Some of Chopin's greatest works were never published in his lifetime, so you'll see that tag of opus posthumus behind the title of the piece on many concert programs and audio tracks. One of Chopin's most famous opus posthumus pieces is the Nocturne in C-sharp minor, made famous in the soundtrack for the movie The Pianist. We heard a little of this in our Joshua Bell pre-concert talk. That was a transcription for violin. Here's a transcription for cello by the Russian-born American cellist Gregor Piatigorsky. Again, this is performed by Sarah Santambrogio. Thank you. So that was cellist Sarah Sant'Ambrogio performing a transcription of Frédéric Chopin's Nocturne in C-sharp minor, published after he died, therefore it's given the numbering of Opus Posthumus. As stated earlier, Chopin wrote almost exclusively for the piano, and so this all-Chopin program at Armstrong Auditorium on January 14th will include a great many of these transcriptions for cello and piano. However, as mentioned earlier, Chopin did write two major works for cello and piano. One is the Polonaise Brillante, and the other is the Sonata for Cello and Piano, Opus 65, the last work he had published before his death. Let's talk about the cello sonata. Now, a sonata, as it was standardized in the mid to late 18th century, was usually a three-movement work. As composers opted for bigger, longer, more epic works in the 19th century, however, sometimes they would write four-movement sonatas, such is the case with Chopin's cello sonata. Before we briefly explore each of these movements, let me give you some interesting background on this sonata's composition. Chopin wrote this for cellist Auguste Franchomme, but it took him a great deal of time to finish. He worked on the piece throughout 1845 and well into 1846, drafting and redrafting sections of it. He wrote to his sister, "I write a little and cross out a lot." Chopin discarded nearly 200 pages worth of sketches of this piece. By the summer of 1847, the piece was printed in Paris. That fall, Chopin premiered the piece with Franchomme in what became Chopin's final performance. The main reason this piece took Chopin so long to compose was that he composed the cello part first. In writing the piano part, he was forced to place his natural tendencies aside so the part would fit in with the cello, which is why some say the piano part sounds somewhat uncharacteristic of Chopin. Though it isn't any less difficult than many of his piano works, I can assure you. I actually noticed the title of the sonata is Sonata for Piano and Cello, not Cello and Piano. The first movement is what we call a standard sonata allegro form, an exposition of two main contrasting themes, a development section that transfers elements of those themes into different keys, and then a recapitulation, a return of the two main themes or sections. The two themes of this movement are the A theme and then the contrasting B theme sounds like this. So let's hear just the exposition of the first movement of Chopin's Sonata for Piano and Cello in G minor. It's marked Allegro Moderato, or Moderately Fast. Thank you. So that was just the exposition of the Sonata for Piano and Cello by Frédéric Chopin, First Movement, performed by cellist Sarah Sant'Ambrogio and pianist Robert Koenig. It's from her Chopin Collection album and will be featured on her performance here at Armstrong Auditorium on January 14th, 2016. The second movement of most sonatas were slow movements, and that was if the sonata was only three movements. Chopin's sonata is four movements. By this time in history, if a work had four movements, the first and fourth were the quicker movements, and either the second or third was the slow movement. The remaining movement would be a dance movement or a light scherzo movement. Scherzo is Italian for joke, and scherzo movements are usually light and quick. So to contrast the moderately fast yet pensive first movement, Chopin writes a scherzo second movement, saving the slow movement for the third movement, obviously. Scherzo movements were almost always in ternary form, an A section, then a contrasting B section, then a repeat of the A section. And this is the case with this scherzo movement of Chopin's cello sonata. Here's the opening A section for this movement. That was the opening section of the scherzo movement of Chopin's cello sonata. That is the second out of four movements. It's quick and light. The third movement of this sonata is marked largo, or very slow. Listen to this sweet, song-like melody on the cello. That's the main theme of the third movement of Chopin's cello sonata, marked largo. That is the slow movement and precedes the fourth and final movement, marked finale allegro. We'll listen to the final statement of the main theme leading into the coda, an Italian word for tale. The coda of any piece is material written at the end to help solidify that the piece or movement is nearing an end. Chopin's codas are always particularly exciting, and in the case of his piano music, the hardest sections to learn. Here's the end of the fourth movement of Chopin's cello sonata in G minor. We're hearing the G minor section of the work, but Chopin puts the coda in a sunnier, happier G major, giving it a joyous ending. Thank you. You are listening to a special episode of Music for Life on KPCG. I'm Ryan Malone, concert manager for Armstrong Auditorium and host for the program. We are discussing cellist Sarah Santambrogio and the All Chopin program she will present at Armstrong Auditorium here in Edmond, Oklahoma, Thursday, January 14th. This episode is another of our pre-concert talks for the various performances we'll have throughout the season at Armstrong. Today we have talked about all the transcriptions of Chopin's piano pieces that Ms. Santambrogio will perform on her recital. These are pieces that famous cellists or composers have taken and adapted for the cello, a process that Chopin generally was in favor of. But she is also performing the two great works that Chopin wrote specifically for cello and piano. We just finished exploring the Sonata for Piano and Cello in G minor, Opus 65. We just heard the last couple minutes of the fourth and final movement. To end our episode today, we will talk about the other major work for cello that Chopin wrote, his exciting Polonaise Brillante, Opus 3. With that low opus number, you might suspect it was published early in his life, and you'd be correct. Chopin wrote this piece in 1829 when he was only 19 years old. When Chopin's father had taken him on a week-long trip to visit the estate of a Polish prince, he met one of the prince's daughters, Wanda, who was a pianist. He composed the Polonaise Brillante for her to practice with her father, who played the cello. Chopin later wrote to a friend that he wrote the piano part in a way that would show off the young Wanda's pretty fingers. And as the pianist for this performance at Armstrong, I can attest to the fact that this piece is quite showy for the piano side of this cello-piano duet. Before its publication, in making final revisions, Chopin relied on the help of his cellist friend Auguste Franchomme, to whom he would later dedicate that cello sonata. This piece begins with a slow introduction, as you have been hearing. The introduction was actually not part of the first version, but was added about a year later before Chopin performed the piece on an 1830 concert tour with Austrian cellist Josef Merk, whose name is displayed in the piece's dedication. When the slow introduction is finished, you will hear the lively Polonaise begin. A Polonaise, as explained in a previous episode, is a Polish dance in a 3-beat per bar meter with a stately tempo. We will conclude the program today by listening to the dazzling and brilliant Polonaise section of Frédéric Chopin's Polonaise Brillante. This is from Sarah Santambrogio's album, The Chopin Collection, with pianist Robert Koenig. Thank you. You have been listening to Music for Life. From the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus, I'm Ryan Malone. Thanks for joining me.